Welcome to Talk Cosmos, the show where Sue Rose Minahan and her panel of guests bring you insightful conversations to awaken consciousness for soul growth. Come journey with us through astrology's energetic cycles and get ready to understand your path in the cosmic roots of the stars.
Hello again. I'm Sue Rose Minahan. This is March 10th, 2024. Yes. And we have an exciting panel up for Planet Buzz today because there are connections in the sky that are just intermingling and powerfully wanting to share the wealth of all their archetypal power. And in Pisces, what else could happen? Because the boundaries are beyond our dimension of our reality. And that's the beautiful part about Pisces. We get a sense of experiencing this world that we come from the spirit, we return to the spirit, yet here we have a chance to perhaps fragment the parts to unify a little complexity. Well, this is Venus and Saturn in Pisces. Imagine love's essence. And I have a wonderful panelist to join with me because Laura Tad had a sudden family issue and wouldn't be joining, but we have always one person with us, and that's going to be Ray Rutter. So we are now ready for Planet Buzz.
Focusing on perspectives of pattern-planet cycle relationships and understanding their archetypal energy consciousness, reflecting through history, current events, mythology, and philosophical questions, these are the members of Planet Buzz.
I'm Sue Rose Minahan, collaborating with guests weekly since 2018. I'm an evolutionary astrologer, consultant, workshop facilitator, and lecture speaker. I'm a Dwarf Planet University graduate, charter member of Kepler Astrology Toastmaster Club. I have an AA degree and a fine arts music degree in jazz. I'm a certified color energy life coach, a writer, artist, musician, and ardent mythologist, a student of esoteric philosophies and life.
And I'm Dr. Laura Tan. I work as a spiritually oriented psychological astrologer with students and clients around the world. As a counselor, writer, and educator, I love helping people recognize their inner strengths, take advantage of auspicious moments, and navigate times of challenge with greater ease. On my own podcast, Mythic Sky Storytime, I discuss astrology, mythology, and actualizing our full potential. Learn more at mythicsky.com.
And as the ancient Hermetic Code reveals,
as below, so above. As above, so below.
So true. Absolutely. Hi, Ray. It is a real treat. Once
Hello.
Again.
Thanks for having me.
Yes. And you've been on since 2018. No small business. It's just you're so busy now as a CEO and publisher, owner of The Mountain Astrologer, besides these other activities that I'm glad to grab you when I can.
Yes. I was actually thinking about the very first one we did together was Capricorn oriented, and we were talking about the green man and the green woman. And so I actually feel like that energy really pulls us into the Saturn, Venus, and Pisces conjunction in a lot of different ways.
It does. It's so ancient. You know, these ideas, they begin and morph around as people migrate and the tribes change and the cultures change, but the ideology is. Yes, so primal. Thank you for remembering that. We've done others too. May we have the presentation? Yes, thank you. So again, this is Imagine Love's Essence. Now, Ray Rutter is the publisher of Mountain Astrologer magazine, which has been on worldwide for years and transforming and with the dynamics consistently such as our life evolves. That's what the energy does. It changes. And she's a consultant, writer, and speaker. Go to her new site, Neptune Underground, for a whole potpourri and a wonderful experience of consultation and more. She is a second generation astrologer, loves the title Astromancer because it's a witch holding space for sacred language play, which she went to school, has a BA in recreation management in English language from California Polytech in San Luis Obispo, beautiful area. And thank you, Ray. It's great to have you. Yes, indeed. And this is my Laura Fax and myself. Here's leading on. There we are. I guess it is all of it. I just have a little portion of Venus. It's the brightest thing in the sky. Can't really ignore it if it's in the evening, unless it's in the morning. Right. And so therefore it has all these mythologies and power in so many ways that are working with us. And I just grabbed a bunch of different views here, if any of these, because, you know, her beauty is in the eye of the beholder, right?
Yes.
And it is that golden mean that Venus brings about, you know, which is a Fibonacci.
And again, you know, we, in our pre-chat of talking about Venus and Saturn and Pisces, you know, we really kind of started with the myth of Venus herself. And like you said, there's a lot of different myths attached to her. But I think, or them, depending on how you want to identify, that, you know, whether you use exaltations and detriments and falls in your practice or not, I definitely feel like a linguistic mytho perspective, it's fun to pull those in and understand why a planet may exalt in a sign or, you know, be in domicile in a sign. And so, you know, with this Venus-Saturn conjunction in particular, being in Venus's sign of exaltation, you know, one of her first myths being born of the sea, I think really, you know, brings that in. And as we were kind of talking about of the myth behind how she is born from the sea foam is that, you know, she was inseminated from Uranus's testicles, who Saturn snipped off and put into the sea.
Yes, to stop that erratic sense of propagation that the sky and Earth, Gaia and Uranus, just love to create and create. At least, well, there's many different ways to look upon it, but life just needs to keep to grow. And there's so many different forms. Yet Saturn, you know, the furthest planet, which is regular, time-oriented, people needed to live. We had dinosaurs for 2,000 years. I have no idea when all this, because it's like a time clock mythology. And here, to have people, we aren't immortal. We share that energy, but we're incarnated. And so we have a finite moment, and meaning that time had to come along and go, sorry, time's up.
Also that idea of, again, when we invoke this imagery of the ocean being the collective consciousness and also being the primordial ooze of unconditional love, you know, that place that we come from and that place that we return to. And like you were pulling on this idea of being incarnated, being finite, being time sensitive, being mortal, is that we actually, like, we want to come for that full spectrum of being, of like, you know, in the primordial ooze of unconditional love, there is nothingness. And I say that in that, you know, it is just the sweet, expansive, you know, forever, everything's okay. And remembering that when we come here, that that is what we will return to. We are not actually seeking to cultivate unconditional love here. And I don't mean that to say that we shouldn't be incredibly loving, but that, again, especially that Saturn-Venus lesson of what are all the different types of initiations through love that we get to walk through.
And the reason...
Go ahead.
And the reason...
Of like familiar love or romantic. Like, it doesn't have to be...
Good points, Ray, because that's the purpose of incarnating, is to experience that, the tethering of anchoring into a soul, into earth. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to jump over to what you had brought up about the mermaid business. That I was reading more about the nymphs, because the nymphs and mermaids, and I have a slide for that, which I've been toggling back and forth as our conversation morphs around. But the fact is that from that story that you were bringing up, the nymphs could not have a soul unless they married a mortal. And that was the interesting part. So, and I'm trying to remember what else.
The one I had brought up in particular is, again, you know, there's so many different water nymph myths. And the Undine is one that, for me in particular, that I'm very drawn to. And one of the reasons is actually some of the spellings that you'll see of Undine actually starts with an O, and it's an Undine. And again, within the Undine or Undine mermaid mythology, it is this idea of fully surrendering to love, you know, fully surrendering to the other. There is I am completely leaving my world. I'm leaving my oceanic home to dwell on earth. And it was, you know, in Undine mythology, there are some myths that indicate that if the person they love is unfaithful, or if they stop loving them, that they die. And the reason I come back to, again, the spelling of Undine as Ondine, is it actually really brings in the Odin mythology from Norse to me, in that when he hangs upside down from the tree, there is that same surrender in love of, like, okay, how do I flip my whole world upside down? And again, that idea too of, you know, Venus's home signs being Taurus, and in particular Libra, and that Libra is one of the only inanimate objects of the zodiac, meaning that it's the scales, but it's also the sword or the mirror. And so again, that mirror of, we cannot see ourselves without a tool. You know, I can't see the back of my head without a mirror, or without a lover or another to reflect that for me. And so there's so much about that, again, Venus and Pisces boundlessness that we see entwined in these myths about what does it mean to let go and fully emerge into that space where you do forget yourself.
Yes, yes, indeed. And I'm thinking, well, yes, you know, here, that timeless forever, that merging of these two archetypes, where you have Venus, that is what we're attracted to, of love, desire, the beauty of life that supports our growth. Words don't really seem to affect its essence. But Saturn is a fundamental form. And you put a wonderful phrase earlier where Saturn is pretty neutral. It has a capacity to have a form, and it is not a stationary thing, of course. It's cardinal. And so it's movement. It's just manifesting this form. And even with that said, the form doesn't have to be stable. Like, I have an earth picture there with holes in it, right? It seeps. Like earth itself, water seeps into it, fires within it, air is even embodied in it. And here, grabbing my mind here, yes, where did it go? Venus, though, wants value. And so Venus does put some emphasis of what this meaningfulness is with it. And so that's so integral to the whole experience of this.
An issue of, like you said, of values that, again, which we see very strongly in Saturn having its exaltation in the sign of Libra, Venus's home sign, or one of Venus's home signs. And so, again, that one of the things that we, you know, in our pre-chat kind of talked about, of there's a lot of language in our modern culture around Saturn and Venus not actually liking one another very much, or in particular Venus feeling a little pinned in, or, you know, that those ooey gooey love vibes are getting some no's, you know, from Saturn's direction. Mm. But that actually, again, you know, Saturn exulting in Venus's sign reminds us of how much Saturn wants to create form so that beauty can exist. And again, that remembering that Saturn's no's are not about being, you know, mean mommy of like, oh, you're not allowed to do that. It's actually about how to have the right container so that you don't move into the toxicity of Venus and Pisces, where that boundlessness gets to a point where, again, you've forgotten yourself so completely that there is actually no space to even understand pleasure or joy at that point. And in that same way of, again, the importance of boundaries and structures, as Saturn is saying, what is consent or non-consent? And until we know what that is for one another, it's dangerous without that container.
Yes, and I think that idea of a container is just like Earth itself is containing the ocean. We wouldn't have a lake, we wouldn't have a river, we wouldn't have a waterfall. And the beautiful thing about the ocean, I'm realizing with Pisces, is it's circular. You know, it is a mutable sign, and which we realize, and water elevates out of the primal all into the air to fall and nourish land and seep within and then wend its way sometimes back to the sea. So it's that constant motion.
Which, and again, an idea of like they need that there is a desire for one another in that energy of, you know, the water seeks to be contained and the container wants something to hold.
I love it. I love it. I liked this question that you said too about Saturn, because it is time. It has 29 and a half years approximately of its orbit. It's perfectly circular, well, as perfect as you can, orbit around the sun, and it doesn't deviate up and down. It's very reliable, which is part of its structure, you know, that we can stand up with a spine and have a structure and let all our muscles and other things mobilize around it. But this idea that you indicated earlier about restriction, because people, maybe because of the courts, we think, oh, there's been a judgment made. It's like good or bad, and these things happen. But really, it's rather reframing it like setting your sails to re-navigate going further. So what you had suggested, which I really like, reframing the restriction to what responsibility are we devoted to?
Because And that, again, goes back to actually how simpatico and conducive the Venus-Saturn relationship actually is. And again, we have such this like mindset of, oh, what is your responsibility? Or, you know, what is your duty, you know, when it comes to Saturn? And part of that reframe is, what do you get to care for? What is in your care? What are, you know, what are you devoted to? What does devotion mean to you? And so, again, that showing up for the things that we love, you know, remembering that when we utilize our Saturn energy well, it's not about breaking ourselves for of like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to do. It's a very parenting dynamic of what do you get to create and how do you nurture that creation?
It gets trickier and trickier, I know, on a personal basis, because, for instance, I'm devoted to this talk program, among other things, and it requires juggling certain things, like getting the slideshow is necessary. So one needs to remind themselves, I'm just as an example, that this is a growth, it's a building, it's many layers.
Well, and that idea of, again, especially invoking that parenting dynamic of recognizing that even when it is something that, you know, we're not always super joyous to show up for because we're tired or, you know, all these other survival concerns, there is still that element of you show up for it, not because it's this, oh, you have to do this, but you show up because you want it to live. You
know, and it's mastery. That's yes. That's the other thing. I was thinking you want it to live. Thank you, Ray. And you want it to really succeed in all its glory. Survive to thrive. Not, you know.
Which, and again, you know, we mentioned of, you know, it's a very famous Stephen Forrest quote of that when you are having a heavy Saturn transit, you can remember two things, that you can either be exhausted or in despair. And in that same way of remembering of like, what are you nurturing? What is in your care? Of on the surface, if you say like, oh, exhausted or in despair, it's like, oh, I don't want to be either of those things. But again, remembering the things that exhaust us that feel really good, where at like the end of the day, you're spent, but you're like, ah, yes, I did it. You know, it's that is what Saturn is seeking. It's not seeking just to exhaust you so that you are in that spiraling despair, but it's the
reaching that top
life. Yeah. Yes. And then again, it's like what
seeing the view. Yes, I know. It's so true. There's nothing like success of reaching the point that you wanted to. This is something too that I brought up because in our conversation, we were talking about roses. And I think with Venus, of course, in Pisces and the perfection of the fact of the spiral, which elicits the Fibonacci cycle and of numbers and the golden mean of beauty of Da Vinci and et cetera. But roses, some are without, I'm not sure if they were ever born without thorns. I think maybe that was created through hybrid. I'm not sure.
When it inspired, it was a quote and I'll have to find the origins of it, but it was essentially saying that roses never hide their thorns, but in your rush to contain it or possess it, you look past, you know? And I think that brings in a few things of the projections that come up in love, especially Venus and Pisces, and how we can get lost in the longing or what we want love to be versus what it actually is. And again, that rushing in, but I also feel like, again, it's a very Venus-Saturn conjunction dynamic of both of them, especially in the sign of Pisces, want to go slow. You know, they want to move with intention. They want to feel it. They don't want to rush. And so again, that idea of like the thorns are always there, but if you get pricked, it's because you rushed past those boundaries without really understanding the full encompassing of me, that you get the beauty and the danger.
And we do, as you had indicated earlier, mirror, you know, we're not isolationists. We're social people by nature. It's a fact. And this business is that we need people to confirm or to, what's the word when we quantify, but validate who we are. It's like an echo. It's a confirmation. And then again, on the other side, if we don't like things, it's often because of something within that we need to change. And that idealism that you bring up with Pisces on like seventh house or any time there's a relationship, because Pisces sees everything as perfection. And
well, it's not even just perfection. I almost feel like the term that's
completion.
Yeah, that comes to me a lot is the idea of the ideal versus the real. And Pisces gets really stuck in that place of the ideal. And they can, again, I almost feel like one of the really beautiful benefits of having Venus and Pisces conjunct Saturn is you actually get some of that discernment so that you don't get lost in the projection, so that you don't get lost in the like fantasy of what could be. And you actually bring in some of that realistic of like, what do I need to make this concrete? What do I make this incarnated and not just this fantasy in my head?
That's good. And at the same time, perhaps in Pisces, diluting or dissolving some of those restrictions and the negative, the shadow side of it, which we tend to think is the all, but it's not. It's just one side. You know, it's very good. I like this.
Well, and again, you know, even to kind of come back to the mermaid dynamic, you know, obviously Venus and Pisces, because Pisces is the fish and Venus is, you know, love goddess. It invokes mermaids. But Saturn, you know, ruling the only actual mermaid of the zodiac, Capricorn, you know, I feel like there is already this oceanic affinity, too, between the two planets. Ooh.
Gee, I like that. It may be a goat mermaid, but it's still a mermaid. Yeah. In fact, oh, I love that. And yes, that's a whole other talk about how the goat mermaid started, because there's beautiful mythology about it, but so important. Another part about Venus that I think is important, you had brought up earlier, this ties in about love and the consequences of it ending. It's tied in so much with our mortality, the fact that we age. And really, do we have the conviction and the vow to really follow through? Do we know what it takes, like you said, with the thorns or whatever on both sides? Because there's grief involved with that loss. And in fact, Venus had a child, which I just discovered. I did not realize, which the name I knew very well, Ennius, because in Washington State, they have Ennius Valley. My folks lived in Ennius Valley. And Ennius is so important because he was a survivor of the Trojan War and moved over with some people to found Rome. He actually was I could go on and on. So the point is that Ennius means terrible grief, because Venus was so unhappy that her child was mortal and would age and die. Isn't that fascinating? Whereas now, I will end that it's been transferred to mean praise, because I was looking it up thinking, where did I find that? Where did I find that? But it is, it's terrible grief. It's very amazing. So in other words, we need to take time and grow within us with that maturity of Saturn, get beyond our limits of ourself, of resistance maybe, of narrow-mindedness, in order to ripen and develop that experience.
And again, that idea that terrible grief is a form of praise, you know, that we experience terrible grief when we love very greatly.
Oh, yes, it's true. In any parting, it's the depth of being human. I suppose maybe that's the gift of this transit. Now, we're going to be looking shortly at the different astrologies connected with this huge archetype that we've touched upon, and the magnitude of it, because it's happening just 2 days after the spring equinox, which resets in many focuses the calendar, because the sun starts again breaking away into Aries of pioneering instinct, right? Yeah. Thank you, Ray. This is Ray Rutter with me today on March 10th for Planet Buzz, with this wonderful connection between these two planets, Venus and Saturn. We'll be right back as we imagine love's essence. Thank you. Stay here. While we take a break from this week's edition of Talk Cosmos, let's take a look at this cycle's archetype. We are currently in the yin period of Pisces, ruled modernly by Neptune and by Jupiter in traditional astrology of the ancients. By leaving a cycle based on the equality of all humans and brilliancy, Pisces concludes the 12 signs that energetically encompass the entirety of the universe, where humans have no control. As a mutable water sign represented by two fish swimming in opposite directions of the forces of life, we experience in Pisces the collective unconscious energy of the unknown. Intuitive, psychic Pisces completes the seed cycle initiated with Aries' willful separation from the Piscean womb.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to the Ananda Institute of Living Yoga, we cover the world of animals. This week, March 17th, it's Behavior Training and Healing Sunday with me, and talk with your human or animal loved ones on this side or the other, and personal awareness coaching with Natasha Venter. Hope you can join us and plan to call in with your questions for either one of us or for a personal reading with Natasha. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Talk Cosmos brings insightful conversations to awaken consciousness for the soul growth with hour-long programs every Sunday at 1 p.m. Pacific on KKNW. Talk Cosmos weekly programs are also available to watch live on the Talk Cosmos YouTube channel and Facebook page. While you're there, make sure you click the like and subscribe buttons so you get the full Talk Cosmos experience. Or if you'd rather listen to the show archives with audio only, the entire podcast collection since 2018 is available on most podcast carriers. And to find out about upcoming programs, sign up for the newsletter at TalkCosmos.com. So grab your coffee, tea, or kombucha and enjoy the show.
Make us part of your daily routine. Alternative Talk 1150.
Hi, we're back again. And let's see, we are going to, there we are, Ray Rutter at MountainAstrologer.com. Or if you want that consultation, go to the Neptune Underground. And I'm, of course, at Talk Cosmos. I want to announce, this is our moment to blare our bugle, that Ray and myself, along with 14 all in all Talk Cosmos astrologers and a few more, are joining East West Books on the spring equinox, which is going to be Tuesday the 19th. There's registration. You'll get a recording, whether you can make it or not, and keep it later. And the theme is going to be about World Astrology Day. It's an International Astrology Day. And so this potpourri of astrologers are going to suggest what is so important that can help you find the sacred space, the sacred timing, or sacred relationships for 2024 that we find. It's going to be powerful and deep. It's a metaphysical group, largely East-West Books. And it, of course, astrology is also metaphysical. So it's going to be great, great fun. And to do that, go to eastwestseattle.org. Or you can look right here and touch it. And if you get my newsletter, it's going to be all over it. So do sign up for that. Just go to talkcosmos.com. And I'll be happy to send you information about that. So Ray and I will be talking, and it'll be exciting. Ray, what do you have? I know you have something too.
Yeah, so our latest issue of The Mountain Astrologer is now live, the Aries Equinox, March through May 2024. Again, especially in our talk today of talking about Saturn and Venus in Pisces, one of the things that we haven't quite touched on yet, but I think it's this idea of how we dissolve some of the old relationship structures that may no longer work for us. Mm-hmm. And in our 2024 issues, we've actually been doing a highlight on queer astrology. And in our last issue, the Capricorn issue, there was a really powerful interview about queer astrology in the medieval context in the Islamic world. Mm. And in this one, we actually have a queer synastry article by Rowan Oliver. And again, even if you are someone in a heterosexual relationship, right, the way we language these things and how we talk about relationships, there's so many just little small tweaks that can be really powerful for all of us to feel included and held in that. And so I really recommend checking out this beautiful new issue and that article in particular.
I really support that, because the whole energy, whether it's Aquarius with Pluto, whether it's Pisces with Saturn, and also Eris, E-R-I-S, the rejected, exclusive, inclusive goddess that started the Trojan War, being on the North Node for so long last year and still powerfully connected, want and
with rather than either or.
Yes, so which learning, and actually one of the
great.
Well, and one of the other feature articles in there is actually a beautiful article on Eris as the alchemist of inclusion.
There you go.
So, way to ping that. So you didn't hear that.
Well, she is sitting on my north node for about a couple of years. So, and I've been trying to find out.
You and I have the same node, Sue.
Ooh.
Are very close, right? Oh, mine are 16. Goosebumps. What are yours? 12?
24.
24. Okay.
Yeah, but close enough for jazz. So excellent, excellent. And now we have here the event happening in just 11 days on the 21st of March. And it'll be 2 days after the spring equinox on the 19th. So it's potent. It's still in that energy as a seed chart that's packed. And the primary aspect, you know, of energy that is working with this conjunction between the archetypes is with expansive Jupiter of growth. So whatever it's doing, it wants more of, just and connecting it. And connection is a very beautiful aspect, isn't it? Where it just says, I've got this in hand. What are you going to use with it? How are you going to handle this?
Totally. And again, you know, I was talking about Jupiter being the ruler of the sign of Pisces traditionally. So this Venus-Saturn conjunction is reporting to Jupiter, you know, and the fact that they are then in this really beautiful sextile with one another, I think, again, points to, again, like we were kind of talking about, of how do we lift ourselves up out of some limiting narratives or re-language around this so that it doesn't feel so crunchy?
I'm bursting. I suddenly realized it ties everything together because Jupiter is the traditional ruler of Pisces. And of course, we have here, well, it's not with Neptune's not far, but they're both in Pisces. And Neptune is within a bit of a distance, but they're moving towards Neptune. And so that's what I was thinking. Is
well,
it, like you said, what's of old and what's of new? And it's again trying to bridge it.
Totally. And again, yeah, the, it's a little wide for, you know, Neptune in there. But I think what's interesting is there's always, so Venus coming to hit Saturn first, we're coming to have that, you know, talk with the elder. This is sitting in grandma's lap and, you know, really beautiful relational astrologer, Diana Harper, she talks a lot about how, again, Saturn is grandma, as you know, that I love that imagery. But this idea that, again, Saturn is a really powerful energy and that sometimes it can make us sad when we spend too much time in it. And part of it is, again, coming back to this time sensitive or this mortality. And so, like, again, Venus sitting with Saturn in Pisces is almost this, like, again, spending time with grandma, and it's really soothing and it's actually really holding, but there's also a sadness because you are reminded of the preciousness of time. You are reminded that, you know, they aren't going to be here forever. And again, I feel like it, hitting Saturn first, there's like this big realistic, hey, what can you create, but be mindful of the laws. And I think it's interesting that Venus is then going to, like, you know, dovetail into Neptune, because there's almost this feeling of like Saturn almost being that tether, like, you know, the movie Inception, where you're going within dreams, within dreams, within dreams. And that if you don't have that totem or if you don't have that tether, you will totally lose your way. I almost feel like this meeting is Saturn giving Venus the totem they need to go into this really tumultuous, again, beautiful, but often disorienting, you know, Piscean Neptunian land.
We do need to experience form in some manner, even if we write things down or draw them, doodle them, listen to music. I'm focusing on Earth, thinking of Saturn as a and earth. I mean, you're saying about the idea of groundedness and realizing that earth itself consists of all the elements. You know, it's not as just a blanketed item like air is air, oxygen, and fire is fire, and water is H2O. It's water. You know, might have salt, may not have salt, but it's still these basic elements. But when you come to earth, I think the fact that we walk on it, we think, oh, it's a like a tabletop. But no, if we go into it, it has worms, it has little animals that burrow in there, and it has fire inside. That just blows me away. Fire inside that never dies, just burn, 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 comes up with Pele and Hawaii all the time, building more, along with air, because if it's not aerated, then it just bounces right off, like in Texas. Can't have any irrigation.
Which something you're actually making me think of right now, real too, is so Venus and Saturn, the two signs that they rule are earth and air signs. And they are the only two planets that both of their ruling signs are earth and air. So again, to talk about that affinity between the two.
Which again, hey, we just went in 2020, but really when you think of 200 years, I'm getting to the grand conjunction between Jupiter and Saturn. That happens every 20 years, but for 200 years, it's in one element and it's been in earth. But as of 2020, December 21st,
we shifted into air.
Yeah. And so here again, it's like the universe is constantly giving us these real different windows to look at the same concept of this energy, because we can only take in so much at one time.
Yes. And interesting that, again, you know, the earth signs come first in the rulership. You know, Taurus is Venus's first domicile, Capricorn is Saturn's first domicile, and then Libra is the second domicile of Venus, and Aquarius is the second domicile of Saturn. So I even like this, like this graduation into air of understanding almost the levity within all that groundedness that we learn.
Oh, this is great. There were several points, but I think as we go along with these different charts, because there were, I think it's on the next one. Oh, well, let's stop that. We'll just use this chart with the Sibley, USA chart, because if nothing else, the South Node at this time that's transiting. Yes.
Well, not only that, is that so we were talking about that the Saturn-Venus conjunction is making that sextile to Jupiter, who's ruling it. And then together they create a yod with the U.S. Sibley Saturn in Libra, in exalted Libra.
Oh, good. And I have that right here, except folks don't look at the moon up there. But it is, I would, South Node Saturn and the boxes. Indeed, meaning that it's the difficulty, the adjustment that we're always working towards doing is how to release a resistance, I might say, or the deconditioning. There was another beautiful word rather than deconditioning that we might apply with the traditional concepts of Saturn. You know, here it is in Libra, which is relationships, which is maybe one of which you were bringing up, of bringing in queer language that's inclusive rather than thinking, no, she has to have this role, he has to have that role. Rather, we're people. You know, we maybe one enjoys something more than the other.
Well, and, you know, it's such a powerful, you know, exalted Saturn there in the 10th house, which I think speaks volumes of the way the U.S. shows up in world power. And there's almost even something I feel like being invoked here of us talking about, you know, dissolving certain structures and forms that no longer work in the way that we relate. You know, I feel like this election season that we are moving into is continuing to highlight, like, how do we rehumanize one another? How do we actually get out of that kind of back and forth, black and white, your side, my side, and get more into that, you know, Saturn, Venus, and Pisces of it's important to create containers where every collective voice is heard.
Yes, a higher elevation, you could say. And including that transit with Jupiter, it's on the outer wheel, folks, is with an orb, you could say, looking just as energy applying towards Vesta, which is the hearth, the home, the fire within that never dies, it's burning. So you could say that really we're attempting to do that, to recreate, rebuild, reinvoke this life fire, yes, of our love. Should I go to the next?
Sure.
Okay. Because the last conjunctions of Venus and Saturn in Pisces were many years ago, in 1994 to 96 in Pisces, as I say, and it started at 1 degree and it went up to 22. Right now, it's at 12, which is right midstream, almost smack dab in the middle, close, not quite, 15, that we've been discussing. And ahead, which will start next year, it is going to be three more times. So it's all within, it'll be a transit of four aspect connections. And because Venus will be going retrograde. So I have those charts. I know you wanted to look at them.
Yeah, let's dive into it. You know, something that comes up for me immediately, especially for the 25 and the 27 degree conjunctions next April, so coming up this time next year, is something that I've always, you know, utilized. And then I think it's important when we're understanding, especially mundane transits, but that, you know, the first 9 degrees, so 0 to 9 degrees of any sign are cardinal degrees. And then the mid degrees, again, of any sign, so 10 to 19 are fixed degrees. And then 20 through 29 of any sign being the mutable degrees. And so again, with Venus, you know, is going to conjunct Neptune at that 25 and that 27 degree of those conjunctions next April. And so again, us talking right now of like, what totem do you need? What tether do you need as you go into these really nebulous realms? Is to think about the fact that it's going to be Venus conjunct Neptune in these highly, highly mutable late degrees of Pisces, you know, which Pisces being the very last sign, I actually feel like the 27, 29 degrees of Pisces is the ultimate like dissolution. Like it is like everything, like complete compost, if you will. And so I do think that there is something so much about, you know, us coming, you know, this is the first time we've had these conjunctions in 30 years of, again, how do we really dissolve some of the ways that we narratives around love? As, you know, someone personally, you know, I personally practice polyamory and it has been, you know, something that I've been moving into and exploring in a lot of different ways. And it's something that's continuing to come up in the collective narrative. And so I almost feel like there is
what
this.
Was that the word
polyamory?
Polyamory.
Or ethical non-monogamy. Essentially, oh, yeah, these exactly. Ideas of, I personally prefer the term relationship anarchy more than anything else. And so I almost feel it's like, you know, and we might, you know, invoke the word anarchy more for like Uranus or Aquarius. And yet the chaos of Pisces can be the like, this no longer works. And what does it mean to exist in that liminal space where we're not in the past and we're not in the future and we're trying to create?
And you know, oh.
You know, that's.
No, I love it. Okay. Oh, I am. Okay. This is what I wanted to share that from thought. And I think it relates. I'm reminded that Venus, by her virtue of birth with her father, you could say, Uranus being castrated, for lack of other words, you know, to stop this birthing, to have it more controlled. She had a crisis birth. You know, her parent was in a crisis, you could say. If it just, because we always think of love as, oh, this hunky-dory roses and roses with no thorns, right? But the point is that out of pain, we find the beauty. We don't wallow in that. We do wallow. I'm not putting any judgment on the time of length of grief or anything. I personally experienced plenty of it myself. And I find many creative ways. I think that's one reason why art is so wonderful for Libra, for instance, or Taurus. Venus rules signs. Music, too, because it evokes that higher realm of trying to get above, as you say, to see a different way that isn't so linear because it's more abstract. You know, it takes maybe an infinite ways of patterns and kind of blends them together in a new kind of a fruitcake or whatever it is, you know? So, yes, but what I'm thinking is when we're talking about new ways of love, again, opening up that idea that what you've brought up, which is it's finite, it's one phase is going to end, whether we stick around and have that determination to go on or just go on in a new way. But there's always pain, even being born. You know, you get your umbilical cord cut and the baby cries maybe to get air. But I had to reflect on that for a long time.
Sense of separation, absolutely.
Yes, that's it.
And this idea that, you know, these Saturn Venus conjunctions, especially the ones next year, are going to be, you know, really shacked up with Neptune. As we said, right now they're a little wide with the 12 to 27, but next April they're all going to be together. And there is such this call to dissolve old structures that, like I said, no longer suit the way we connect, the way we love. And I think even to, like, you know, talk about the last time that we had these conjunctions being in the 1990s is, you know, there's so much talk about how the sexual revolution, you know, started in the 60s. But I feel like it isn't until the 90s where we really started to see traction in some of these things, you know, like genuine movements to now where we are of, like, how much more liberation we have. And yet, even within that liberation, think about how much societal shame or judgment, to talk about Saturn, exists in alternative ways of relating.
Yes, and I bet a lot of that has to do with Saturn, just innately, I was thinking, because at that time, with that strong Pluto and Uranus, things were going to change a lot, disruptive, but not have that lasting power of Saturn. I have quite a few. We have 5 minutes, which just is a management, time management here. And I have.
You can just look at them briefly.
Okay. So we'll start off. It was 94. There'll be three. There'll be another one in 95 and one in 96. And I was looking at the nodes. Of course, they were in late. Look at that. The North Node right next to Pluto. Amazing.
28. And we also have, you know, that Jupiter being at 15 Taurus yes, for this one. And in that one, it's 14 Scorpio at that opposite point.
The awareness point, right. Mm-hmm. And you're right. The one would be merging into, which is Scorpio, whereas Taurus is about survival. You know, survive and thrive. My resources, I'm not exchanging them. I might build them up. So if you want to exchange, fine, but it's mine.
Well, and I think there's almost something interesting in that story, too, of, again, when we talk about Jupiter being the ruler of that Saturn-Venus conjunction in Pisces, the first one back in 1994 was in opposite sign of Scorpio. So what are we now integrating with Jupiter being the ruler of this conjunction in Taurus instead of Scorpio? And that, again, that assimilation of essentially opposites or the dichotomies that come up.
Now, I think this is the next year, but it looks like the North Node is exactly the same. So did I mess up?
It looks like it's the same chart, yeah.
Yes, it is. Darn, I'm sorry. I was doing this pretty late. Okay, well, but it says 13. So what did I do last time? Yes, it's the same one. Darn it.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's supposed to be April. Oh, we don't have it. Okay. So we'll do, here's February. And it looks like the moon was big. Well, let's jump into next year. The first one is going to be on the 18th of January at 16 degrees. And that's right in the middle, of course, of mutability. And it's opposite time to release. That's 29 Virgo. Detail City. See the big picture, right? Well, thank you. Yeah, and I have here some ideas that we didn't get to. And, of course, we thank you so much. Well, we can talk for half a second. There, we have. Maybe our idea here is to imagine rebirth. Yes? What else would you?
I like that. Yeah, I'm totally re-languaging how we want to love and how we want to show up for one another.
Ah, with dedication and fervor. Love it. Thank you, Ray. I'm with.
Thank you for joining an insightful conversation on Talk Cosmos, the show where Sue Rose Minahan and her panel of guests awaken consciousness by connecting soul growth patterns with astrology's energetic cycles. Be sure to tune in next Sunday, 1 p.m. Pacific time, to continue your journey through the roots of the cosmic pathway.